The hobbits seated themselves beside him, one on either side, with their backs to the stony wall, resting their legs. There was no need for any arrangement by word. They knew that they mustn't sleep for a moment. Slowly the moon went by. Shadows fell down from the hills, and all grew dark before them. The stars grew thick and bright in the sky above. No one stirred. Gollum sat with his legs drawn up, knees under chin, flat hands and feet splayed on the ground. His eyes closed, but he seemed tense, as if thinking or listening. Frodo looked across at Sam. Their eyes met and they understood. They relaxed, leaning their heads back and shutting their eyes or seeming to. Soon the sound of their soft breathing could be heard. Gollum's hands twitched a little. Hardly perceptibly his head moved to the left and the right, and first one eye and then the other opened a slit. The hobbits made no sign. Suddenly, with startling agility and speed, straight off the ground with a jump like a grasshopper or a frog, Gollum bounded forward into the darkness. But that was just what Frodo and Sam had expected. Sam was on him before he had gone 2 paces after his spring. Frodo, coming behind, grabbed his legs and threw him. "Your rope might be useful again, Sam," he said. Sam got out the rope. "And where were you off to in the cold, hard lands, Mr. Gollum?" he growled. "We wonders, aye, we wonders. To find some of your orc friends, I warrant, you nasty, treacherous creature. It's round your neck this rope ought to go, and a tight noose, too." Gollum lay quiet and tried no further tricks. He didn't answer Sam, but gave him a swift, venomous look. "All we need is something to keep a hold on him," said Frodo. "We want him to walk, so it's no good tying his legs or his arms. He seems to use them nearly as much. Tie one end to his ankle and keep a grip on the other end." He stood over Gollum while Sam tied the knot. The result surprised them both. Gollum began to scream, a thin, tearing sound, very horrible to hear. He writhed and tried to get his mouth to his ankle and bite the rope. He kept on screaming. At last Frodo was convinced that he really was in pain. But it couldn't be from the knot. He examined it and found that it wasn't too tight, indeed hardly tight enough. Sam was gentler than his words. "What's the matter with you?" he said. "If you'll try to run away, you must be tied. But we don't wish to hurt you."
"It hurts us. It hurts us," hissed Gollum. "It freezes. It bites. Elves twisted it. Curse them. Nasty, cruel hobbits. That's why we tries to escape. Of course it is, precious. We guessed they were cruel hobbits. They visit elves, fierce elves with bright eyes. Take it off us. It hurts us."
"No, I won't take it off you," said Frodo. "Not unless..." He paused a moment in thought. "Not unless there is any promise you can make that I can trust."
"We will swear to do what he wants, yes, yes," said Gollum, still twisting and grabbing at his ankle. "It hurts us."
"Swear," said Frodo.
"Smeagol,"
said Gollum suddenly and clearly, opening his eyes wide and staring at Frodo with a strange light.
"Smeagol will swear on the precious."
Frodo drew himself up, and again Sam was startled by his words and his stern voice. "On the precious? How dare you?" he said. "Think. One ring to rule them all, and in the darkness bind them. Would you commit your promise to that, Smeagol? It will hold you, but it's more treacherous than you are. It may twist your words. Beware." Gollum cowered.
"On the precious, on the precious," he repeated.
"And what would you swear?" asked Frodo.
"To be very, very good," said Gollum.
Then, crawling to Frodo's feet, he grovelled before him, whispering hoarsely. A shudder ran over him, as if the words shook his very bones with fear.
"Smeagol will swear never, never to let him have it. Never. Smeagol will save it. But he must swear on the precious."
"No, not on it," said Frodo, looking down at him with stern pity. All you wish is to see it and touch it, if you can, though you know it would drive you mad. Not on it. Swear by it, if you will, for you know where it is. Yes, you know, Smeagol. It's before you. For a moment it appeared to Sam that his master had grown and Gollum had shrunk. A tall, stern shadow, a mighty lord who hid his brightness in grey cloud, and at his feet a little whining dog. Yet the two were in some way akin and not alien. They could reach one another's minds. Gollum raised himself and began pawing at Frodo, fawning at his knees. "Down, down," said Frodo. "Now speak your promise."
"We promises. Yes, I promise," said Gollum. "I will serve the master of the precious. Good master. Good Smeagol. Gollum, Gollum."
Suddenly he began to weep and bite at his ankle again. "Take the rope off, Sam," said Frodo. Reluctantly, Sam obeyed. At once Gollum got up and began prancing about like a whipped cur whose master has patted it. From that moment a change, which lasted for some time, came over him. He spoke with less hissing and whining, and he spoke to his companions direct, not to his precious self. He would cringe and flinch if they stepped near him or made any sudden movement, and he avoided the touch of their elven cloaks. But he was friendly, and indeed pitifully anxious to please. He would cackle with laughter and caper if any jest was made, or even if Frodo spoke kindly to him, and weep if rebuked him. Sam said little to him of any sort. He suspected him more deeply than ever, and if possible liked the new Gollum, the Smeagol, less than the old. "Well, Gollum, or whatever it is we're to call you," he said, "now for it. The moon's gone, and the night's going. We'd better start."
"Yes, yes," agreed Gollum, skipping about. "Off we go. There's only one way across between the north end and the south end. I found it, I did. Orcs don't use it. Orcs don't know it. Orcs don't cross the marshes. They go round for miles and miles. Very lucky you came this way. Very lucky you found Smeagol. Yes, follow Smeagol."
He took a few steps away and looked back inquiringly, like a dog inviting them for a walk. "Wait a bit, Gollum," cried Sam. "Not too far ahead now. I'm going to be at your tail, and I've got the rope handy."
"No, no," said Gollum. "Smeagol promised."
In the deep of night, under hard, clear stars, they set off. Gollum led them back northward for a while, along the way that they had come. Then he slanted to the right, away from the steep edge of the Emyn Muil, down the broken stony slopes towards the vast fens below. They faded swiftly and softly into the darkness. Over all the leagues of waste before the gates of Mordor, there was a black silence. Chapter 2. The Passage of the Marshes. Gollum moved quickly, with his head and neck thrust forward, often using his hands as well as his feet. Frodo and Sam were hard put to it to keep up with him, but he seemed no longer to have any thought of escaping, and if they fell behind, he would turn and wait for them. After a time he brought them to the brink of the narrow gully that they had struck before, but they were now further down the hills.
"Here it is," he cried. "There is a way down in sight, yes. Now we follows it out. Out away over there."
He pointed south and east towards the marshes. The reek of them came to their nostrils, heavy and foul, even in the cool night air. Gollum cast up and down along the brink, and at length he called to them.
"Here! We can get down here. Smeagol went this way once. I went this way, hiding from orcs."
He led the way, and following him the hobbits climbed down into the gloom. It was not difficult, for the rift was at this point only some 15 feet deep and about a dozen across. There was running water at the bottom, It was, in fact, the bed of one of the many small rivers that trickled down from the hills to feed the stagnant pools and mires beyond. Gollum turned to the right, southward more or less, and splashed along with his feet in the shallow, stony stream. He seemed greatly delighted to feel the water, and chuckled to himself, sometimes even croaking in a sort of song.
The cold, hard lands, they bite our hands, they gnaws our feet. The rocks and stones are like old bones, all bare of meat. But stream and pool is wet and cool, so nice for feet. And now we wish...
What does we wish?
He said, looking sidelong at the hobbits.
We'll tell you, he croaked. He guessed it long ago. Baggins guessed it.
A glint came into his eyes, and Sam, catching the gleam in the darkness, thought it far from pleasant.
Alive without breath, as cold as death, never thirsty, ever drinking, clad in mail, never clinking, drowns on dry land, thinks an island is a mountain, thinks a fountain is a puff of air, so sleek, so fair, what a joy to meet.
We only wish to catch a fish so juicy sweet.
These words only made more pressing to Sam's mind a problem that had been troubling him from the moment when he understood that his master was going to adopt Gollum as a guide, the problem of food. It didn't occur to him that his master might also have thought of it, but he supposed Gollum had. Indeed, how had Gollum kept himself in all his lonely wandering? Not too well, thought Sam. He looks fair famished. Not too dainty to try what hobbit tastes like. If there ain't no fish, I'll wager, supposing as he could catch us napping. Well, he won't. Not Sam Gamgee, for one. They stumbled along in the dark, winding gully for a long time, or so it seemed to the tired feet of Frodo and Sam. The gully turned eastward, and as they went on, it broadened and got gradually shallower. At last the sky above grew faint with the first grey of morning. Gollum had shown no signs of tiring, but now he looked up and halted.
Day is near, he whispered,
as if day was something that might overhear him and spring on him.
Smeagol will stay here. I will stay here, and the yellow face won't see me.
We should be glad to see the sun, said Frodo. But we'll stay here. We're too tired to go on any further at present.
You're not wise to be glad of the yellow face, said Gollum. It shows you up. Nice, sensible hobbit, stay with Smeagol. Orcs and nasty things are about. They can see a long way. Stay and hide with me.
The three of them settled down to rest at the foot of the rocky wall of the gully. It was not much more than a tall man's height now, and at its base there were wide, flat shelves of dry stone. The water ran in a channel on the other side. Frodo and Sam sat on one of the flats, resting their backs. Gollum paddled and scrabbled in the stream. "We must take a little food," said Frodo. "Are you hungry, Smeagol? We have very little to share, but we will spare you what we can." At the word hungry, a greenish light kindled in Gollum's pale eyes, and they seemed to protrude further than ever from his thin, sickly face. For a moment he relapsed into his old Gollum manner.
We are famished. Yes, famished we are, precious, he said. What is it eats? Have they nice fishes?
His tongue lolled out between his sharp yellow teeth, licking his colourless lips. No, we've got no fish, said Frodo. We have only got this. He held up a wafer of lembas. And water, if the water here's fit to drink.
Yes, yes, nice water, said Gollum. drink it while we can. But what is it they've got, precious? Is it crunchable? Is it tasty?
Frodo broke off a portion of a wafer and handed it to him on its leaf wrapping. Gollum sniffed at the leaf and his face changed. A spasm of disgust came over it, and a hint of his old malice.
Smeagol smells it, he said. Leaves out of the elf country. They stinks. He climbed in those trees, and he couldn't wash the smell off his hands. Mind his hands.
Dropping the leaf, he took a corner of the lembas and nibbled it. He spat, and a fit of coughing shook him.
Ah, no, he spluttered. You tried to choke poor Smeagol. Dust and ashes. He can't eat that. He must starve. But Smeagol doesn't mind. Nice hobbits. Smeagol has promised he will starve. He can't eat hobbits' food. He will starve. Poor thin Smeagol.
I'm sorry, said Frodo, but I can't help you, I'm afraid. I think this food would do you good if you would try, but perhaps you can't even try. Not yet, anyway. The hobbits munched their lembas in silence. Sam thought it had tasted far better, somehow, than it had for a good while. Gollum's behaviour had made him attend to its flavour again. But he didn't feel comfortable. Gollum watched every morsel from hand to mouth, like an expectant dog by a diner's chair. Only when they'd finished and were preparing to rest was he apparently convinced that they had no hidden dainties that he could share in. Then he went and sat by himself a few paces away and whimpered a little.
"Look here," Sam whispered to Frodo,
not too softly. He didn't really care whether Gollum heard him or not.
"We've got to get some sleep, but not both together with that hungry villain nigh, promise or no promise. Smeagol or Gollum, he won't change his habits in a hurry, I'll warrant. You go to sleep, Mr. Frodo, and I'll call you when I can't keep my eyelids propped up. Turn and about, same as before, while he's loose."
"Perhaps you're right, Sam," said Frodo, speaking openly. "There is a change in him, but just what kind of change and how deep, I'm not sure yet. Seriously, though, I don't think there's any need for fear at present. Still, watch if you wish. Give me about 2 hours, not more, and then call me." So tired was Frodo that his head fell forward on his breast, and he slept almost as soon as he'd spoken the words. Gollum seemed no longer to have any fears. He curled up and went quickly to sleep, quite unconcerned. Presently his breath was hissing softly through his clenched teeth, but he lay still as stone. After a while, fearing that he'd drop off himself if he sat listening to his two companions breathing, Sam got up and gently prodded Gollum. His hands uncurled and twitched, but he made no other movement. Sam bent down and said, "Tsh," close to his ear, but there was no response, not even a catch in Gollum's breathing. Sam scratched his head.
"Must really be asleep," he muttered. "And if I was like Gollum, he wouldn't wake up never again."
He restrained the thoughts of his sword and the rope that sprang to his mind, and went and sat down by his master. When he woke up, the sky above was dim, not lighter, but darker than when they had breakfasted. Sam leapt to his feet. Not least from his own feeling of vigour and hunger, he suddenly understood that he'd slept the daylight away, 9 hours at least. Frodo was still fast asleep, lying now stretched on his side. Gollum wasn't to be seen. Various reproachful names for himself came to Sam's mind, drawn from the gaffer's large paternal word hoard. Then it also occurred to him that his master had been right. There had for the present been nothing to guard against. They were at any rate both alive and unthrottled.
"Poor wretch," he said half remorselessly. "Now I wonder where he's got to."
"Not far, not far," said a voice above him.
He looked up and saw the shape of Gollum's large head and ears against the evening sky.
"Here, what are you doing?" cried Sam, his suspicions coming back as soon as he saw the shape.
"Smeagol is hungry," said Gollum. "Be back soon."
"Come back now," shouted Sam. "Hi, come back." But Gollum had vanished. Frodo woke at the sound of Sam's shout and sat up, rubbing his eyes. "Hello," he said. "Anything wrong? What's the time?"
"I don't know," said Sam. "After sundown, I reckon, and he's gone off. Says he's hungry."
"Don't worry," said Frodo. "There's no help for it. But he'll come back, you'll see. The promise will hold yet a while, and he won't leave his precious anyway." Frodo made light of it when he learned that they had slept soundly for hours with Gollum, and a very hungry Gollum, too, loose beside them. "Don't think of any of your gaffer's heart names," he said. "You were worn out, and it's turned out well. We are now both rested, and we've a hard road ahead, the worst road of all."
"About the food," said Sam. "How long's it going to take us to do this job? And when it's done, what are we going to do then? This whey bread keeps you on your legs in a wonderful way, though it doesn't satisfy the innards proper, as you might say. Not to my feeling, anyhow, meaning no disrespect to them as made it. But you have to eat some of it every day, and it doesn't grow.